Justice Miller Lerman is rejoining the court. Is it Ms. Schutz?
Yes,
good morning to you. Let's give everybody a second to get in and out. I think that has now happened, so you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Melissa Lang Schutt, and I am the attorney for Carissa Wolfslaven, appellant. This case is a little history. This case is a divorce, and there was a child that was conceived prior to the marriage and born during the marriage. So this is a case of a marital presumption. The main issue, well, go through a little bit further on history. The parties, at the time they were married, understood. Both parties knew that she was pregnant, knew that it was a possibility that there was another father, and that the other father was black. He was not a Caucasian. Both of the parents appear to be Caucasian. When the child was born, there have been discussions with the doctor who was dealing with the birth prior to the birth of the child that there may need to be some type of a genetic test, so there's a possibility that the husband was not the father. The father, both mother and father, were present during that doctor's appointment. When the child was born, Mr. Wolfslaven asked the doctor, and both parents were there, asked the doctor, what do you think? And the doctor said, you're good or you're clear, something to that effect. And both parties thought that meant, okay, this is a child born of the marriage. And the mother put the father's name on the birth certificate, and everybody thought that this child was a biological child of both the mother or the husband and wife.
Counsel, I want to fast forward a little bit. And at this point, I haven't read the record directly. I've read summaries of the record. Sure. And it suggests to me that your client is wanting to disestablish paternity of her ex-husband, but not attempting to establish paternity of someone else. Is that a fair reading of the record?
Well, she is wanting to rebut the presumption that Mr. Wolfslaven is the biological father of this child. My client had not had contact, other than I think they were Facebook friends, with the person who would be the biological father of this child. She is, while this divorce has been pending, whatever, she is with somebody who she does intend to marry, or did intend to marry at that particular point once the divorce was resolved.
And that's not either one. It's not either her ex-husband or her soon-to-be ex-husband or the person...
Or who we assume to be the biological father. Now, I will advise that if in the event, because there was some discussion in the testimony regarding the present significant other to be possibly be the adopt the child at some point. Well, obviously, in order to do that, she would need to pursue the other father. So there is going to be some type of relationship. At this point, she certainly has not. She has not pursued it, mainly because of right now we have a presumed father. I know the appellee had indicated in brief that she could have gone to the alleged biological father and gotten a genetic test and whatever. Well, yeah, if he would voluntarily do that. Otherwise, she didn't have an option because we have this presumed father. She's just going to go there and say, hey, guess what?
Isn't the best interest of the child our pole star in this type of proceeding?
Isn't the best interest what? I'm sorry.
Of the child our pole star in this proceeding?
Certainly. But I guess the question is what is the best interest of the child?
Exactly. And how is it in the best interest of the child to disestablish the only father that she's ever known, not to establish a biological parent, but to establish someone with whom the child has never had any relationship.
And at this point, I don't know that we know whether there's going to be some type of an establishment with the biological father at this point. Again, there hasn't been to this point, but it's primarily been because of Anna. She has a husband who is wanting to be the father of that child, and I understand that. And we are not saying that he should not have a relationship with this child. As a matter of fact, she recognizes he wants to be in a relationship. The confusing part about this is that this is a child who very clearly, and I believe that the court had the pictures that were introduced into evidence, this is a child who is clearly biracial. And at some point this child is going to say, okay, you're not really my dad. You know, and then this child is going to say, okay, who is my father? I mean, maybe not at, 3 years old now. So at this point, she doesn't, not going to question that, but she is going to question it later.
Wouldn't that be true whether it's the current husband or the proposed future husband adoptee?
It would, but at least it would make more sense, I guess, to me. I'm trying to think of myself as maybe a teenage child. What would I be thinking to have the dad or the husband say, you know what? You know, I loved you so much that, I've always been a part of your life, and you know, even though I'm not your biological father, I have continued to have this relationship. This child can always have this relationship with the father.
How's that any different than at age 15, she looks to her new adopted father and says, well, you're not my father, and then they have the same conversation. So if it's bad for the present father, who's not presumed, he's actually the father, how's that not equally bad for the new adoptive father?
Well, it's not, other than for him to say, I'm assuming an adoption is not going to be secret. You know, so, I mean, what it appears what we're trying to do here is somehow hide the ball, that there is another father out there, that there is a biological father out there. And again, that both parties, everybody knew that there was a biological father out there. What we're arguing about today is whether this judge should order the genetic test, basically to allow the evidence. That is the truth. The truth. We want to know what is the truth. This is not...
Do you have a statutory basis to require this genetic testing?
Other than a statute that we had provided to the court in our argument that is based on more child support enforcement trying to establish paternity.
Do you think that fits?
I had hoped it did. But I agree with you. I don't think. I think there are some definitions in there that we have some problems with. I think this happens fairly often that in divorces that people, that if there's a question as to whether there's whether the father or the husband is the father, that's not unusual. And courts generally order it. What we have here is basically a court that decided that it just that they shouldn't allow us that evidence.
The purpose that you seek the evidence, is it, would the utility of it be sound in the law, or just a curiosity?
I believe it's sound in the law. As far as custody, it's sound in the law that a biological parent is has priority over a non-biological parent. again, we, this is basically kind of a step-parent situation.
Priority for what?
Excuse me?
Priority for what?
For custody. Right now, the parties are doing a joint custody situation.
What would you consider the status of the father right now? Is the existing father's the legal father?
Based on the presumption, mm-hmm. he would be, based on the presumption.
And what do you propose you're going to do if it's determined that he's not the biological father? How would that change?
What would change is it would change to an in loco parentis situation. And my client is perfectly fine with that. He doesn't have an objection.
Who would the legal father be at the point that if this test were granted, and it wouldn't determine who was the father, it at best could determine who was not.
Who was not the father.
So you take the child from someone who has a presumptive father to a child that has no father.
Correct.
And how is that in the child's best interest?
Well, at the time when this began, my client was on Medicaid. And I believe she still is on Medicaid at this particular point. And I believe that basically there would be a paternity action pursuit. So there would be an established legal father at that particular point.
Counsel, before you sit down, help me understand the position that your client took with respect to child support. I understood from the record that what she said to the trial judge was whether my husband is or is not the biological father, I'd like him to pay child support. Help me understand that.
Okay, and Senator, that was based on something that I had read. In reading the in loco parentis case law, those cases tend to say if you're going to have visitation in loco parentis, that there is child support associated with that. My client does not, you know, she really doesn't care as far as child support one way or another. That was based on some information I had provided her. And that was based on case law that I had read.
Thank you very much. Mr. Plachek, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Ms. Shutt, on behalf of appellant, I'm Shane Plachek. I represent the appellee, Mr. Wolzleben, who is the father of Addison. I'd like to at least start talking a little bit about the whole statutory argument that appellant asserts here, which is that 43.14.14 is the statute whereby she can compel a district judge to order a genetic test of a presumed father, in this case Mr. Wolzleben, and his daughter. I read the court's opinion in In re Alicia C., which was a 2012 case, and so we're talking about a different statute but still part of the same act. 43-14-12.01. In that case, the court found very persuasive that the legislature did not use the term child in that statute. And so the court did not read 14-12.01 in paramateria with the rest of the act. In this case, appellant is asserting 43-14-14 would compel the district judge to order a genetic test. In 43-14-14, however, there's a reference to the word child, which I believe this court found significant that was not used in the 1412 Alicia C. case. The word child is used in the 1414 Wolzleben case. As child is defined as a child born out of wedlock, I do not believe that Addison fits within that for purposes of what appellant is asking for. Additionally, 1414 refers to an alleged father, and Mr. Wolzleben is not an alleged father, he is a presumed father. By virtue of the marriage 5 months before Addison was born. When we look at, I think...
Is he a presumed father? Is he a legal father?
Yes. And at this point in time, if we are to discuss 43-14-12.01, that does assume that at some point in time you have a genetic test, which we do not have. And in almost all the other cases that I read, there was a version of genetic test, especially after 2008, which is the Disestablishment Act, basically. In addition, it is to set aside a court order, administrative order, or obligation to pay child support. In this case, none of those things existed at the point in time when Ms. Wolzleben requested that my client be genetically tested. in talking about the statutory construction, I'd like to at least talk about the purpose of this Disestablishment Act. And at least this court, I believe again in Alicia C. in 2012, said the purpose of 1412.01 is that it allows a former spouse or ex-husband to protect themselves from years of support in the event they have no biological connection to the child. So this is a case, at least in my opinion, that is at least a first impression of a mother attempting to eject a father from a case. So in reading through, whether it's Alicia C. or I think there is Caesar C., there are a number of cases this court has discussed this issue, disestablishment. It generally focuses on the diligence of the party seeking to disestablish themselves, generally the father. In addition, I think it allows people to use the disestablishment perhaps as a shield to protect themselves from 19 years of child support or financial obligations, or from fraud in the event that they were defrauded by perhaps the mother. But I think when parties seek to use it as more a sword or a spear, this court has generally not supported that. And I'm talking specifically LLB versus Hill. That's a 2004 case, so it preceded disestablishment, but the decree was 96, and the father sought to set it aside in 2002, and that was described as an excusable lack of diligence by the court. I believe there's some other versions of State on behalf of BM versus Brian, which is a very recent case, 2014. The father had suspicions he was not the father in 96, and he didn't do anything until 2011. So in this case, you have Mr. Wolzleben, who was acting as basically the co-parent of this child when she was born up until they separated about 10 months later. And nobody filed anything for one full year, 12 months. During that time, Ms. Wolzleben and Mr. Wolzleben co-parented this child 50-50%. Thereafter, when we filed the complaint, that is the first time Ms. Wolzleben ever raised the issue of whether or not Aaron was the father. And so certainly we resisted that. But when we look at the father's lack of diligence in some of these other cases, I would question the mother's lack of diligence. The mother's in the unique situation, perhaps more so than the father, to know what other relationships occurred prior to or at the same time as a relationship with the father. The fathers sometimes don't know. Mr. Wolzleben did not concede at trial that he is not the father. I don't think there's evidence other than testimony of the mother. He said that he had some mixed race in his background and his heritage, that they discussed when this child was born that he may not be the father, but that was it. There was nothing else done for 2 years until Ms. Wolzleben raised this issue after he filed for divorce. So as far as equity is concerned and the best interest that I believe the court was asking about, I think it would be far more equitable for the mother to present a genetic test from who she believes is the father in court rather than just eject a father with no one else to financially, emotionally, or socially support this child. I don't think that would support a best interest standard, which is the pole star in my opinion as well.
Counsel, do you think that if we were to throw in with you and the test did not go forward and the divorce decree was entered determining that your client was the father, do you think he would still have any opportunity at some later time to exercise Section 43-1412.01, the disestablishment statute?
You know, it's interesting because I don't know if there's really a bright line rule or test. I would think that Aaron would significantly undermine any argument he has by continually asserting he's the father, especially now that the mother has said, I think there's ample evidence that you're not the father. So, in my opinion, would I argue that? I wouldn't feel comfortable arguing that.
Do you think he would be judicially estopped from seeking a disestablishment, having resisted this application?
I think that would be the legal terminology that I failed to identify. But basically, when he has this opportunity at this point and he has knowledge. So when we argue estoppel, I think one of the elements is that Mr. Wolzleben does not know the truth of the situation. Once I think you awaken inquiry, which the mother has certainly done here, I think he'd have an obligation to pursue that. And I think I would agree with this court that he would be estopped from asserting, I want to be disestablished, I no longer want to be a child support. Again, if he did that at a later date, I think the interpretation would be he's using it again as an affirmative action, a spear, a sword, rather than protecting himself from fraud. It isn't fraud, in my opinion, if somebody has brought it to your attention and you choose to ignore it for a number of years. And again, we have to think back to Addison and the father connecting with her, bonding with her, emotionally connecting with her, and what it does to her if in 2 years father would say, I no longer want this bond because I don't want to pay child support. Obviously, that's very detrimental to the child, and the court would look at that in determining whether or not disestablishment. There aren't any more questions. I would like to reserve what I have left for rebuttal.
I don't think you get any further rebuttal, but I think Ms. Shutt has suggested that trial courts order this sort of thing. I hesitate to use the term all the time, but the suggestion was there's some inherent power of the court or something other than a statutory authority to order this testing. Are you aware of what that might be?
Other than the 1414, Your Honor, I'm not aware of what that would be. I would say that when we refer to this, just kind of generally speaking, not talking directly about the evidence before the trial court, I can't say I've seen it very often where a mother seeks to disestablish a father. Generally speaking, and I think that that article in 43-14, 1201, and 1414 is meant to assist a father in attempting to prevent a fraud from continuing. I generally haven't seen it utilized as an affirmative act to eject a father. You know, if we talk about creating this idea of equitable fatherhood, I think it would behoove somebody challenging that paternity, that person exercising their responsibilities as a parent, to come forward with someone else rather than just eject someone. You come forward with a replacement, poor choice of words, but somebody else to identify as a financial support for this child.
Wouldn't the general discovery rules potentially allow a test of the parties to an action to be compelled to take medical tests?
I know that regarding psychological testing and things like that, I know that's in the general discovery rules, but I'm sorry, I can't say that I'm familiar enough to answer that question.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Sure.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go to the next.